Hey, it's Rob Lightfoot, proud two-time alum of Rowan University.
And I'm Jessica Kennedy, also a two-time Rowan alum. And you're listening to
Beyond the Brown and Gold.
Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS-FM presents Beyond the Brown and Gold, a show that highlights the lives and memories of Glassboro State and Rowan University alumni. Now, here are your hosts, Rob Lightfoot and Jessica Kennedy.
On today's show, we have a very special guest, Charity Herndon. And don't be confused, because she has a pen name.
Yeah, she's got two names.
Yeah, two names.
For the price of one.
Yeah, so we call her by multiple names in the interview. Her pen name, what she wrote her most recent book, her first book, is Elise. And it has an unusual spelling, so I'm going to spell it in case you're on the lookout for her. A-L-Y-S-E. Did I get that right?
I think you got it right.
You're so proud of me.
Yeah, I am actually. I was a little nervous.
She was such a fun interview. She tells us all about her first book. She's a teacher. She's just so much fun. All right, Charity, thanks so much for joining us in studio today. You are on spring break.
I am on spring break. I'm a first grade teacher. Oh. So all the kids are home and I don't have to deal with them right now.
A little bit of a blessing.
Oh my gosh.
Big blessing.
What do you normally do during spring break? Do you travel? It's so yucky out
it
here
is.
In Jersey right now.
I wanted to go to the beach and read, but it's fine. I'm reading at home. I'm binging shows on like Amazon Prime right now.
Okay.
So I'm just taking it easy. I should be writing, but.
That's okay.
So with first grade class, this is like your moment of like clarity, zen.
Yes.
Just to kind of like pull it all in.
You'd be surprised how much energy first grade, like whatever you think they have, the energy they have, multiply it by 40.
Yeah, what is that like? Like at the end of the day, you must be exhausted.
My head hurts a lot.
Yeah.
I have like, I don't want to be touched. Like my fiance will try to give me a hug and I'm just like, go away. Like I'm just overstimulated. I've been pulled on all day. And so, yeah, it's great though. I love the kids. So
that's exactly what it's like having kids by the end of the day. I'm like, nobody touch me, nobody ask me anything. Yeah, it's crazy. So all right, take us back. So we know you're a first grade teacher, so we know a little bit about you, but take us back to growing up and how you found Rowan and decided to come here.
Yeah, so I grew up in Woolwich, New Jersey.
Right around the corner.
Yeah, nothing but land. Mm-hmm. And I was homeschooled, so I had a lot of time to read. Okay. I loved reading and writing, and I just was in love with going to the library. That was like my movies or my mall trips was just me and my friends. We'd just walk to the Swedesboro Library and hang out all day.
Wow.
And so I knew from a young age that I wanted to write. Even before then, in kindergarten, I like made this fan fiction Cinderella retelling.
Wow.
And I put black characters at the center because, you know, around that time there was no Tiana, no Princess and the Frog. So I really didn't see representation in Disney characters. So I wanted to do that. And I showed my kindergarten teacher and she told me that I was committing copyright infringement.
Wait, how old were you? Like,
I was
six?
Like six. Yeah. She's like, I'm just letting you know, like you could go to jail for that, for rewriting a story and claiming it as your own.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so
that's aggressive.
I was so scared.
Lessons learned about now you becoming a first grade teacher,
take
right?
That like Chappy, what
you
GPT. Said.
You remember what your teacher said, so I'm sure you're careful what you tell the students.
For sure, because it was her words that really made me afraid to write. Mm. I threw away all the books I had in my cubby and I vowed to never write again. I didn't want to get arrested. So
how frustrated was your family when you came home and told them that? So is that what? So you were homeschooled?
Yeah, that's why I was going to
ask that
question.
That's why I became homeschooled.
Okay.
So I went through a lot at that specific school. We weren't living in Woolwich at that time. We were living in Haynesport. So I went through a lot at that school. Like even the librarian, she wouldn't let me check out a Junie B. Jones book because I couldn't read the words in it.
Wow.
And she let like all the other little girls check out and she wouldn't let me check out. And my first grade teacher at the time, she had written a note home to my mom and was like, Charity experienced racism for the first time. Like maybe it's time you have that talk with her.
Wow.
Because the teacher who is a white woman saw that all the other, you know, little white girls got to take out whatever book they wanted and I wasn't allowed to.
Oh my gosh. You were a nugget. Like that
I was so little. I didn't understand. Yeah. I didn't understand. And so it was a tough conversation to have with my mom.
Now, could you have read it? You were reading.
The thing was, I could have. But, yeah. I mean, I'm in first grade, so she pointed to all the really, really, like, hard words.
Yeah.
We were learning, like, and, it, as, them. And so all the other little girls really couldn't read it either.
Yeah.
But she was like, oh, like, you know, your parents can read it for you. But for me, apparently, my parents didn't know how to read. I don't know what the case was. But
well, so let's talk about the homeschool experience. So you were in the actual school system itself, developed all these friendships. You are developing these social skills. And then you go into this homeschool environment.
Yeah, what does that look like?
What does that look like?
So my mom's a hippie, so she unschooled us.
Wait,
so
what does that mean?
It's basically like you kind of see what your child likes to do and you like focus in on that. Obviously, you still do like math and all that stuff, but she noticed that I really liked reading, so we focused, my curriculum was more focused on reading.
Wow.
And so I ended up going, starting like college classes. It's called the HSOP program. I started at 16. So that kind of like filled in the blanks. And then I would take like one class a semester. And so, yeah, that was my homeschool experience. Lots of library and reading. And then I did RCGC. Is it still RCGC?
RCSJ now.
Oh.
We just switched the letters.
Rob knows all the acronyms.
we switched letters around. That's it.
Shows how old I am.
No.
At that time, it was RCGC, but I would do like math and things with them. So it kind of like filled in the blanks.
How important that teacher saw something and spoke up and made sure that that information went home with you, because somebody could have just not even have thought twice about that.
Right.
And that was so smart that she made sure that you were taken care of and you knew what was going on.
And then how did boundaries get set? I'm curious about this. Sorry.
Yeah.
How did boundaries get set as far as like, okay, this is school time, but now it's sort of now I am mom and we're, you know, I'm teacher mom and now I'm not mom. Does that make
sense?
There
were no boundaries.
Okay, all right. That's what I thought, but I don't want to unveil the whole genie out of the lamp just yet.
My mom, like I said, she's very like much a hippie. So even when we were enrolled in school, because I went to public school, then I went to private school, and if we needed a mental health day, she'd just be like, "Mental health day? Yeah, okay. Well, you don't
mom
have to
needed
go to
the
school.
Mental health day.
Yeah.
No, mental health day is not when your kids are home with you. So sorry to let that genie out of the lamp, but that's true. But no, that is really important. When I was growing up, if we like, it was like, oh, you're sick, then you stay on the couch all day and you don't leave the couch. But mental health days, like to think back, that's important that your mom recognized that as well and was like, okay, let's just hang tight. Sometimes you just need to be home for a minute.
Yeah. Kids can get, you know, totally tired of everything too and get, you know, their brains need a rest.
So was it overwhelming for you to move into then? As you progress through your schooling here and you eventually, you know, come to Rowan University and such, as we go into those systems, was it stressful for you to be into these like larger classrooms with class of one to class of 30?
No, because again, like I was doing the HSOP program. So okay. I was like, I didn't have like fun. I had homeschool prom. And then
at your house?
No, so we had like
I didn't know how far we're gonna go with this, but let's keep
go ask all the questions.
Okay, thank you.
So we had like we were part of this like homeschool co-op, which is pretty big around here. I'm sure some of the listeners probably know about it, but they had like theater programs, and then we met like every Thursday at this like really big church and we'd take classes. So
cool.
I was around other kids.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that existed.
And then we had homeschool swim. So like every day.
I've actually never met anybody homeschooled.
No, that's what I'm curious about.
We're just picking your brain. This whole interview is going to be about your home. You didn't know that, but it's going to be about your homeschool experience.
Yeah. But no, like I was around other kids my age growing up, specifically when I came to Rowan. It wasn't much different. I knew a lot of kids like from homeschool that went here. We did the HSOP program together at RCGC. So we just, when we transferred here, it was just, we had our own little like friend group, maybe like 30 of us.
That's very cool.
So.
Did you come in as a defined English major?
I did not. I was going for education.
Okay.
And then I went home to my hippie mama and I was like, I don't really feel this. Like, I don't really feel education for my future, which is funny because now I'm a first grade teacher.
Yeah.
But I did not want to be a teacher. I wanted to be an author. And I was like, if I'm not an author, then I'm not going to be anything.
Mm.
And so I went to school for English.
Okay.
I switched my major midway. So like maybe like after my first semester, I switched. So I was still taking like normal classes. It wasn't any education.
Did that like immediately feel right?
Yes.
In your bones?
Yes, yeah. Because I got to read for fun and for school. So it was like I was graded for reading Shakespeare. And I loved doing those things. So it was great. I loved it.
Is Shakespeare your favorite?
I do like Shakespeare. I love Shakespeare. And then I took the African-American literature course here, and I learned a lot about, like, Zora Neale Hurston and Toni Morrison and Ralph Ellison. And so it showed me, like, oh, my gosh, like, Black people wrote literature, American literature, and you can do it, too. So
isn't it kind of amazing? Like, I always think this is the coolest part about college, right? Like, you go through your, you know, your K through 12 experience, and you're being taught really, like, what – New Jersey or whatever state you're in, what curriculum they define. But then when you go to college, it's such an awakening because, like, you get to decide what you're learning and you pick your path. And I think it's so neat that you can say, this is what I'm interested in. Like, I wasn't really a great student K through 12. But then in college, I flourished because I liked what I was studying. I was really interested in that. And I think that's the cool part about, you know, getting a higher education is you kind of get to pick what that path looks like, and you get to pick what your learning experience is. So you chose reading and English all the way through. That's great, because that's so clearly what you were – that's like a core memory for you.
And how much writing were you doing all at the same time?
So, like, writing for fun? In the beginning, none, just because the papers are crazy. It's like I went from just writing, like, 2-3-page papers to, like, 12-page papers. And then it wasn't until my – say, like, senior year, maybe end of junior year, that I started actually, like, writing again for fun. And that's, like, how the journey started to getting published, was writing my draft of my first novel that was published here on the campus. So
tell us about what writing for fun, like, what kind of zone do you have to be in to write for fun? Like, are you like a, I need to have lights down, like a certain music?
A little lavender, maybe? Yeah. Some votive candle.
I mean, everything's inspired, you know? There's different ways to inspire you, so.
Yeah, so definitely, and it's like a blessing and a curse, because that means I just can't, like, get into writing, especially when I'm on deadline. I'm on deadline right now for my second novel, so, like, I can't just, like, get into it, like, oh, I'm just going to pick up my laptop and write, and it's going to be great. Like, everything has to be perfect. Like, everything has to be perfectly set. Days like this are really good for writing.
Oh, I took you away from that. Yeah.
No.
We're just wasting your time with this podcast. You could be writing a novel.
Maybe we could be incorporated into one of
Only name nice characters
for us. Yeah, only the characters can be this podcast crew.
Did
yeah.
you find that you found your writing voice while you were here?
I definitely did. Like I said, I took the African-American literature course, Dr. C. I don't know if she's still here. I think she's still here, but she taught it. And it just, it opened up my eyes to the things that I could write about. I think before I thought that I could just, like, I had to stay in a box. But then, like, I could write about my experiences being a Black woman and, like, being a woman. And so I knew that I could, like, touch on more serious subjects. It didn't just have to be, like, flowers, butterflies. So
nobody wants to read about that.
I entered my goth stage. Very emotional.
Oh, my gosh. So were you writing for any of the publications here on campus? I don't know. Is it literary magazines? Oh, we always ask this question. The Venue or Avant? No, I'm not sure if they're still around, but maybe cut that part of the game. But were you writing for any of the publications here on campus, nothing like that?
I wasn't. I was afraid. Like, I didn't think anybody would like my writing. Like, I knew I'd like to write, and I knew I liked to read, but I didn't know if I was good at it.
So what was graduation day like then? So you go from this, like, homeschooler to this, got to be a big, huge accomplishment, sense of accomplishment for you that day. Had to be an emotional piece there.
Yes, because I was friends with all of my professors. And so, like, I didn't have a lot, like, a big group of friends here, but, like, I really got close to a lot of my professors. So it was very, like, emotional to leave them.
Yeah.
And I was just, it was a very, like, sad, but it was an exciting, moment.
They're probably all listening. So do you want to name them by name? Do you have a favorite? Do you have an absolute favorite?
Oh,
that, like,
I can't
somebody who...
say. I just had lunch with like 10 of them.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so say, I can't say.
Okay. You have a long career ahead of you. Don't burn any of those bridges. So what did you think when you were graduating? And you were did you get a Bunce Green graduation?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, I did. Yes, and it was great.
Yeah, it was great.
That's it was hot.
Yeah. Mm. Hey, it didn't rain. That's great. When you were graduating and going through that experience, what did you think was next for you? Had you had a plan, or?
I had no idea, because English major. So again, it was writing. During my last semester, I took with Professor Mikulski, I took writing children's stories. And so she gave us an assignment, and she's like, write a 10-page creative writing story on anything you want, as long as it's targeted at teenagers. So this is going to answer your question, I promise. It's just the long way around.
That's okay.
I'm here for it. So I ended up, writing a 10-page story about, it was like a Romeo and Juliet retelling. Again, I love Shakespeare, but I put like black characters at the center. And I made it about like these two towns that were like, it was an all black town, all white town, and they like never crossed. They had like train tracks that separated them, whatever. And so I was like, well, you know, this is my assignment. And I handed it in, and I was so, so scared that day for everyone to like read it, because again, I didn't think that I was really good at writing. I just knew I liked it. And so everyone just like read it in class, and people were crying, and they were like, this is one of the greatest things that I've ever read. Can I show this to my friends? Can I show this to my kids? Like, sure. So Professor Mikulski, actually, she called me into her office, and she's like, I think you need to turn this into a novel. Like, I think that, you know, young adult literature needs a story like this. And so she ended up kind of showing me the ropes on how to submit to agents in order for agents to submit to publishers. And so that was my plan after graduation. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I, like, specifically when it came to, like, a job, like a corporate job, but I knew that I wanted to try and get this book published. So I had, like, my graduation gown on and just a dream to publish this 10-page short story that I had written.
Wow.
And yeah. You fleshed it out to how many pages? Like,
ooh, so she was like, yeah, you need to make this longer.
really evolve the characters, really evolve the scenes, kind of describe the situation. So
It ended up by the end being like, I think 429 pages.
Whoa. From 12?
Yeah. Yeah, so I ended up making it told from three points of view. So it allowed it to be a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always like a book like that.
That was hard.
Like being in the grad program here like a jillion years ago, and they say you have to write a thesis. You're like, what? You're going to write how many pages? And like, you end up and you look at it, it's like, oh, 83 pages. Like, I don't have 83 pages of anything to say. You know what I mean? Like,
creative writing and academic writing is
very, very different.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very different. Like, I remember when I was in the grad program, I had to do academic writing, and my professor was like, academic writing is like, you say it, and you say it again, and you say it again. Like, you just kind of keep repeating. But creative writing, you have the world. Like, you could go kind of anywhere.
Yeah, you create your own worlds and realities and characters. So
how this got, this finished, what did this finish to? Like, was that your final page count for the publishers?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's long. Like, that's into fantasy, because I'm writing regular, just like YA dark contemporary fiction. So that's supposed to kind of cut off at like 250 pages. And so I was like, they're not going to want this. But again, Professor Mikulski. And it's so funny, because I think back, like, my kindergarten teacher told me to stop writing, and then my professor told me to write.
Right.
So it was just like a full circle. And she's like, just submit it as it is and just have hope.
What is with these elementary school teachers? Why didn't your kindergarten teacher tell you to stop writing?
She's evil. No.
Yeah. You had a terrible,
I don't know.
Yeah, elementary school education.
Yeah. But
wow.
Mom saved it with being homeschooled.
Ooh, my goodness. Blessings to your mom for stepping in. And
honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that could have looked completely different for you.
I could have never written anything.
So what was that process like to submit to the publisher for what? I've never written a book, so I don't know how that works.
Not yet.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe we'll.
Hey, after this, maybe you'll know.
Yeah.
So you write the book, and then usually you would like give it to someone to look over, and then whatever, they call it like a beta reader, they'll tell you the things that you kind of need to change.
Okay.
I didn't do that because I didn't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know what you're going to tell me. So I wrote it, and then I wrote like a second draft, and then I started submitting it. You submit it to agents. Like, I got this really big book from Barnes & Noble, and they re-release it every year, but they have every single agent in like America.
Okay.
In England, I think, too, in the book. And then, like, it tells which genres they're accepting. So then you submit it to an agent. You submit the first 10 pages and a synopsis of the whole book and a query letter, which is kind of like what you'd read on, like, the back of the book.
Okay.
And then they decide if it's right for them, and then they'll go ahead and they'll submit it to a publisher. And so my journey was long. I got 248 rejections from agents.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what do they provide you? They give you actual feedback, or they just say, no, we're not interested?
So sometimes, I think a couple times I had requests, which means they'll be like, oh, we like this. Can you send me the whole manuscript? And then you wait like 6 months until they finish reading and they get back to you. But yeah, some of them will give you like edits and like, hey, like, you know, you can resubmit to me if you change this or if you take this character out. Oh. And then others are just, it's just a form response. Like, sorry, this isn't right for me.
So when they came back to you with feedback, did you feel like, oh, that's good feedback? Or did you feel pretty protective of the original story?
I felt protective of the original story. And yeah. I'm glad I didn't, because a lot of the things that people like the most about the book is the things that a lot of the agents told me to take out. Mm. They said it was very serious because at the center of the book, there's a black boy is murdered by a police officer. So the town's really, and a black boy from one side, the black side of town is murdered from by a police officer on the white side of town. So it starts this like race war.
Yeah.
And then at the center, there's a girl named Capri from the black side of town who's in love with this boy named Zach from the white side of town. So it's like taking out, I think, the boy from being murdered like would have ruined. It would have taken like the whole point of the story. And a lot of the agents were just like, hey, like, I don't know if publishing wants this. I don't know if publishing is ready for this.
That's so loaded, right? It's like, yeah. Well, publishers don't want to tell stories of things that actually happen. Like,
right.
Yeah.
That's... And some do. I think it's just, it's the agent's palette. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful that I found an agent that believed in the story, you know, 240 something rejections later.
There's
but
a story there, yeah.
Yeah, she loved it. And I think from our first phone call after reading it to like getting a book deal was maybe like a month.
Wow.
But yeah. talk to us about that perseverance piece, because I think that's the yeah. big thing. Like the rejections piece is one thing just to say, all right, yeah, I got rejected. But how do you keep on going after rejection 100, 101 to...
No, rejection, you know what I mean? Like two. I
mean, two, yeah,
okay.
Well.
Clearly,
clearly, I'm more used to rejection than you are.
I think it made me question my writing.
I'm sure
a
it did,
lot.
Yes.
Like, I was like, I'm terrible. I think it's just like, I always tell people, don't quit your daydream. Like, we all have this thing that we long to do. And people tell us that it's impossible yeah. or it's not likely. And I think, like, what encouraged me along the way is first, like, my relationship with God. And I would always, like, look at scriptures that just kept me, like, really going and, like, don't give up. And, like, I have plans for you, plans to prosper you. And so I held on to a lot of, like, the scriptures that were close and that just encouraged me, but also just, like, group of friends around me, like, who just really believed in this book. And my mom, of course. I remember right before I was going to quit, I'm like, I'm not submitting this anymore. I'm done. I'm throwing it away. I'm going to be a teacher. Like, I don't know. I'm going to figure out my life. And she was like, hey, when life gives you lemons, write a book. And that made no sense to me.
Like, yeah. Wait, I thought I was supposed to make lemonade. Like,
make
Mom
lemonade.
Clearly doesn't.
And she's like, just submit it one more time. One more time. And that was the time that I actually got the agent, like, literally in my email a couple weeks later. And she's like, hey, I want to have a phone call. Like, this, I think this is something. Like, we have something here.
So then what does it look like after that? So you get a call, then they say, yes, we want to publish. And then do you work with that agent for anything that you do after that moving forward?
That's the plan usually. Sadly, I don't. Her husband developed cancer, so she had to like leave. But I have a new agent now who's perfect. But yeah, so like right after that, we did a couple very, very light edits because she wanted to keep the meat of the story where it was. And then we sent it over to an editor, HarperCollins Publishing, and she loved it. And she showed interest and she's like, hey, we want to buy this book. And then my agent was like, hey, if they want it, let's submit it to a few other editors. And then she submitted to an editor with Simon & Schuster. And so Harper and Simon kind of fought over the book, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. And then we went with Simon because they offered us more for it.
Yeah, now take that money. Okay,
you got to do it. So now what does it look like for you to continue writing? Do you have to write a certain amount? Like you said, you're on deadline right now. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so I just got another book deal with my editor from Simon & Schuster for a book that's actually coming out in 2026.
Okay. Are you allowed to tell us what the book is going to be about?
Yeah, because it got announced. It's about a boy named Jabari who goes to a boarding school in upstate Pennsylvania where his cousin was found dead. I mean, they just think like it was an accident, but Jabari ends up realizing along the way that his cousin's death was not accidental and that underground in like the catacombs of the school, they actually make all the black boys fight to the death for a college scholarship. Wow. So he finds that that's kind of like tied to how his cousin passed away.
Okay, so I'm gonna need to read your book because I love a dark book. Like I know, is that weird, surprising about me?
Yeah.
Okay, I love a dark book. I also love a dark show. So yeah, that sounds really
it's
deep.
Like, it's like Fight Club, and I've never seen Fight Club. So
I don't remember seeing Fight Club.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Oh wow.
You can't talk about it, so you can't
die. It doesn't exist. So when do you have to have like a final draft in by a certain time?
I have to have like the synopsis for the book by Friday.
This Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, we're totally jamming you.
I know.
No, it's perfect.
Oh my
God. Do you need some ghostwriters for you?
We're not the people.
No. We have one in the room, maybe. It might
participate. not Rob or I, yeah. But. Okay, so Friday, you have to have a synopsis. Okay.
And then when is the actual launch, do we think, of the actual publication?
So when will it come out?
Yeah.
Spring 2026. It takes 2 years for a book to. From writing to being published.
And so you're doing this while being a first grade teacher?
And planning a wedding and buying a home and all the good adult things.
Oh
so,
my goodness.
Yeah.
How are you holding up?
I don't know. Lots of therapy.
Yeah, for real. That's a lot of stuff.
Writing is my escape. So it's rejuvenates me. It's like the spinach that Popeye take that would make them strong.
Speaking of therapy, in our little notes here, I see that you're currently pursuing your master's degree in clinical mental health therapy.
Yep.
Is that just to get good content for your books?
Kind of. No, I want to understand people more so that I can understand my characters better, but also therapy helped me a lot. And so I do really want to offer that to other people.
That's amazing.
A space to talk. And I'll never, ever, I always have to say this, take my clients' life and write about it.
Yeah. I'd be like, do it. I'll take a royalty fee.
We have this Jess woman that we were able to write 17 books on. There's a lot there.
You got it in.
Yeah.
How does being a first grade teacher fit into all this? So I have a 5-year-old who's going into kindergarten next year. So I do have a little bit of an idea of what that age is like. But do they rejuvenate you? Did they give you a break from this kind of dark writing that you're doing sometimes?
Not really, because the school's across the street from a cemetery. So when I look out, it's just ooh, inspiration. I love the kids. They definitely remind me that I'm more than a writer. Mm. They keep me on my toes. So first graders now, it's you're talking to 12-year-olds. They're very, very smart.
Yeah, what's the basics, the fundamentals of what you're teaching in first grade?
So it's just the basics. I'm at a charter school, okay. So they're it's different. The math is very different, fractions and things
that. Oh, they use that lattice method stuff? Is that what I'm talking about?
They do.
I can't stand that.
They don't let them. So you know how we would stack 23 plus 45 and then we would stack it and kind of solve it? So they have to break apart the tens and ones and then they have to add everything together on the side. And then they have to decompose the number. So 25 would become the 2 would be 20 and then 5 and then the 40. Then they have to add what they're decomposing. It's weird.
I'm going to be the worst when my kids are doing real math. I don't know how you
just tell Brian. Just tell Brian.
Neither one of us, I think, we're good at math. So
we've had parents come. Can you show me how to do this?
Yeah.
We've had to sit with parents and teach them.
Now, what are you doing for fun when you're not teaching, when you're not writing books, when you're not... doing the mental health,
planning.
When you're not wedding planning, when you're not, who knows what else you're doing.
Oh, well, reading.
Okay.
Yeah. I got a Kindle for my birthday.
I love a Kindle.
Most people don't. Most people are I like the paper. I like to feel the book, but.
I don't need to feel it. Mm-mm. Do you feel that as a writer, though, you want people to hold the book as long as they're reading it, right?
When they had announced that we were getting an audiobook for my first book, I was more excited about that than I was anything else because they had three actors.
Are you reading it? Are you?
Did I read my
book? I guess it's different from the books that I listen to. I listen to business books, so sometimes the author will read this, but obviously they need the characters.
Yeah, they had three characters that sounded like teenagers because it's two boys and one girl. And so they
go back and forth.
We should have gotten a couple excerpts and tried out for the part for the next book. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't know if I sound like, how old are they?
In this book, it's just one point of view. It's a male and he's 16.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
I don't think you can pull that off.
Sorry.
Sorry, Rob.
Can you pull off the slang? That's the question.
Maybe. That's possible. Yes.
I don't know. I don't know what slang is these days. I'm learning new words all the time. So we have not really even told, we will, you know, have done it later, but tell us about your book, like where do we find it? What's the title? We would need to know all the things so that our listeners can find you.
Yeah. So the book is called Other Side of the Tracks by Charity Elise. It's about a racially divided town separated by train tracks and what happens when black blood is spilled on the white side of town. Both towns erupt into a war zone with our three main characters, Zach, Capri, and Justin, caught in the middle. So it's available anywhere books are sold. I think like Target, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, all the places. Amazon, Kindle, and then Audible, if you prefer to listen to them like me.
Now, I have to ask, from the personal standpoint, is your fiancé into this stuff?
He likes my books. So like I'll listen to audiobooks and everything in the car with him and he'll just kind of like be in and out of it. But he'll like listen as I write and tell me the things that I need to change or things that don't make sense.
What does he like? If it's not your book, or no.
What does he like? He likes anime. He's like, he's a nerd. Yeah. Yeah. He's into that. And I'm not into anime. So we kind of are like trying to show each other like you should read more. Like you should watch more One Piece or Avatar or whatever.
Now, do you trust his voice, like when you're reading it to him and asking for his feedback, because you mentioned earlier about like trusting who reads it? Is he like your person that you're like, please read this and let me know if you think this is any good?
Yes, because again, with the anime thing, like the stories are really good. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of understands how a story should work, and especially with like big reveals and everything. So he tells me the truth. He's really honest, and he's honest in a nice way.
I'm definitely gonna pick up your book. And
thank you.
I feel bad that we took time away from you like writing your next novel, but I'm really excited for you and all that you're doing. And it must be cool, like someday your students that you're teaching now will be old enough to read what you've written, and they'll be able to be like, she was my teacher and she taught me how to read and write. I mean, that's a pretty cool legacy that you'll have, is you're able to relate to those students. So that's really great.
And like encourage them that they can be and do anything and not like stunt that.
Well, that must be such an important piece for you, right? Like you have these very vivid memories of teachers either telling you can't do something or sticking up for you when they saw that you were being treated unfairly. So I'm sure you probably bring that into your teaching.
For sure. Because teachers are like second parents. They're with the kids so long. So really what they say really builds or breaks the students that they have. So
I was recently talking to my son's teacher about a potential concern, and I knew that she was the right person to go to, because I said, you see him in situations I don't. You see him at school. I don't see him there. You see him with other students. I obviously don't see that. So yeah, you're absolutely right. That role of a teacher is so important, and the ability for a parent and the teacher to connect and make sure that everyone's on the same page. So
that's super good. Important.
That's
for sure.
Good stuff.
Hey, well, it's cool that Rowan had a little bit of little inspiration for you to write this stuff and go down this road. It's very cool.
I wrote it at the Barnes & Noble up the road.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Crazy.
Charity, thank you for coming on. We're really excited to see what you do next. And thank you for shaping the young lives of little ones. That's such an important job that you're doing on top of being an author. So we're really excited for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Now, I think the cool thing about Charity's story was her story of homeschooling, right? Mm-hmm. Which is something that you and I weren't familiar with, that we were kind of sort of digging into, because there is that question of social skills and how do we build up the skills. But thanks to her hippie mom, got her up and running there. And then she was able to sort of like build off of those foundational pieces and really be influenced by a professor here at the university, where she sort of blossomed, took off, was encouraged, and now a successful author.
I mean, so cool, because imagine how hard it must be to turn a 10-page paper into 400 pages, but she's got so much creativity in her. I
stress over emails. I stress over emails, so I can't imagine doing something like that.
No, we're going to get you to read. Maybe this is your like first.
Maybe
it's
my first one. We'll do a book, a Beyond the Brown and Gold book club.
Yeah, like you could read. I mean, we were talking post-interview about why adults still read YA, young adult novels. And they said that the largest audience for young adult novels is actually adults. So maybe Rob will just add you to that pile.
I'm a young adult at heart.
Yeah, yes, that is true. That is true.
Charity, appreciate your time today, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of Beyond the Brown and Gold.
You've been listening to Beyond the Brown and Gold on Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS FM. You can find more episodes on your favorite podcasting platforms by searching for Beyond the Brown and Gold or Rowan Radio On Demand.